Pepsi Prebiotic Cola in original and cherry vanilla. That Pepsi taste you love with no artificial sweeteners, only 30 calories, just 5 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of prebiotic fiber. That great Pepsi taste with even more to love. Pepsi Prebiotic Cola. Unbelievably Pepsi.
Easter should be the best day of the year. It's a celebration of the resurrection of hope. Come to Crossroads Church and celebrate an empty tomb and a living hope. Info and service times at crossroads.net.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. I am so excited this morning to bring you some good news, something we've been working at behind the scenes. I always hate it when, have you ever gone on those channels? I don't know if you do this, but you go on them and they say, whatever, breaking news, we have some great news. And then they make you listen to a bunch of commercials and some other things. And they say, we'll get to that. That always drives me crazy. I guess it's just a ploy to have people stay on longer. But I talked about this yesterday, and we got confirmation from the SAC in Phoenix, and also the support of the Guthrie family to go ahead and begin a billboard campaign featuring Porch Guy's face. And this is really great news. Actually, I want to show you the picture that I plan to use on these billboards. Let me add this to the screen. So we've got three subjects to go over today, but this is the most exciting one to me, because a lot of people aren't on social media. In fact, many people, there is no Spanish person tuning into mainstream and social media, but they do drive in back and forth to work. Many people live in Mexico and actually work here. So they do drive back and forth. And so we're going to be putting these billboards actually at the choke points on the south to Mexico, and also east and west, obviously going to California and then going to Texas, because that was the original place that the FBI had placed these billboards. Obviously, in my opinion, concentrating on the Hispanic populations, particularly the Mexican populations in our country, where they wanted to focus their billboard effort. And we're going to continue with that, but a little bit closer to home in this Tucson area. This is the picture that I plan to put up. Oh, why did that one come up? Sorry. Let me remove that and put this one on. This is going to be the picture. So imagine it just gigantic up. And then we're going to have Spanish and English subtitles that will specifically say, have you seen this person? You know, and we've got permission, of course, to use all the FBI's tip lines and hotlines, which is really important, because we needed them on board with this campaign. And if I'm reaching out today, I wanted to make sure I had all of this in place. Again, the Guthrie family is also in support. And so specifically, if for some reason, I've got to get how much, I've got the number, I'm going to reach out to figure out how much this will cost. And if these billboard companies, this particular billboard company, will be in line with us in helping support us with this effort. So as soon as I have the numbers, and I want to put up four, even if we can only get one to start, I want to put up four. And again, that's going east, going west, and two going south along the highway. And if we can get this going, hopefully it will cost nothing. But if not, we already have a GoFundMe set up. We just haven't hit the button To ask for help. And I'll be putting that out there. Hopefully some of the other outlets I've reached out to, of course, some of the other outlets that I'm affiliated with, obviously News Nation, and many of the other Newsweek, the New York Post, many of the other outlets, that Inside Edition, that have been featuring Nancy's case and that I have an affiliation with. So in any event, really excited about this. I think this could lead to a breakthrough. When I think about all the cases, I love how Dale Lundberg said it. You know, a saying in law enforcement is, I'd much rather be lucky than good. And of course, really, luck is where hard work sort of causes luck. And this is the work we need to put into it to get this done. Because all it takes is somebody looking up there that maybe didn't even know this crime was happening. I always call back to the pizza guy. Remember the pizza guy who was at Nancy's doorstep because somebody ordered pizza that was a YouTuber, and he goes to the door, and then it's so great. The media is like, do you know where you're at? He said, no, I have no idea. He literally drives by dozens and dozens of cars. But that's how focused people are on their lives. Look, people need to make a living. People don't have time. Or if they have time, this just isn't their hobby. True crime isn't their hobby. I think all of us could say that true crime is not only our passion, but it's our hobby per se, meaning that when we have extra time, when we're not working, when we're not with our families, when we're not on the tennis court or the golf course or whatever one's passion is, other passions or hobbies, this is what we do. I spend way too much time doing this. I have such a passion for it because it's in my blood. I've done it ever since I was, I took my first internship with the Inspector General when I was 21 years old. So since I've been, and then they hired me right after. So ever since I've been 21 years old, and really prior to that, because obviously I was a criminal justice major. So just, you know, everybody probably knows my story. You know, getting attacked really changed my life. I thought I was probably going to go to law school. I never thought that I could possibly be a doctor. My younger sister became a doctor. I don't know why. You know, I think when we're younger, we're daunted by what we can and cannot do. I felt like I could definitely make it through law school. And I kind of thought in my brain that is what I would always be, but not to digress. All I'm saying is takes hard work and a bit of luck. And as Lundberg would say, God intervenes. So let's hope that in this, for those of you out there who are believers, that God intervenes in this and that somebody looks up at this billboard and recognizes this, because I think this is a very recognizable case. And just to have the FBI on board with this effort, that we can use their hotline tip line number, of course, which is what I wanted to make sure we had that all squared away, and that the family was on board. That's all squared away. We are good to go. Anyway, I'm very excited about this, as you can probably tell. All right. I want to talk about a couple of other things. First of all, I want to put up here a recent statement from our beloved Sheriff Nanos. Sheriff Nanos says, and you could see on March 23rd, he said this, you know, kind of the signs we've always known. And that is that, there's law enforcement analysis and action that is going on because something occurred on January 11th. You know, we've known this from all the reporters out there. They've talked about how neighbors have said, sure enough, that the 11th, they've asked them for extra footage and things along that line. And also, you can see here, he specifically says it's the FBI's analysis of the equipment and digital stuff that they've done, that they know the 11th is important. So I think this is really critical now to see sort of a reinforcement of what we knew. The family, I focused on that yesterday. The family said the 11th was important. the Guthrie family. Let me see if I have that one up here. Let me put that up there. But the Guthrie family also said yesterday that was, here it is. This is a quote from the Guthrie family. So the 11th is critical. And of course, many of us believe that signifies the image that the FBI released. Again, I pulled these directly from Kash Patel, which he got them out right away, which I was so happy to see that he didn't keep them back. He released them, my word is within 2 to 3 hours. And of course, this is one of the images that I think likely is from the 11th. Shoes are different, shirt's different. The backlighting is different. No holster, no backpack. So of course, I think it's critically important to keep one's mind open that it could have been the same night. And then he added, put something over. But it just as we did a deeper dive, it was clear that this was a different day. And now I think based on both what the Guthries say and based on what Nano says, the 11th, he did what I call a site survey. So it's just very interesting. Again, back to my premise, I've always believed that the back door was what was penetrated. In other words, where he went in or somebody else went in. If you look at, and let me bring up this other picture. I know I have it here. Of course, there's two back doors, right? I'm going to bring this to the stage. There's this back door off of her patio, but there's this back door. And this is the back door that I think was likely that he would have gone in. Why do I say that? A lot of reasons, but remember these guys, the locksmiths, this was the door that they appeared to work on. So it makes just a lot of sense that they penetrated, or whoever entered, whether it was only porch guy or whether it was more than one, that they penetrated here. I also want to talk to you about something really important, I think, to discuss. And that is everybody wants to believe, and I'm going to put this other picture up. Everybody wants to believe that sort of a car was waiting out there. Not everybody. I just want to say that I think a lot of people have that premise. First of all, he didn't, porch guy and nobody else, piggybacked off the property with Nancy Guthrie. She weighed 150 pounds. Very difficult to manage that kind of weight. Particularly, and I'm going to say dead weight, not meaning dead, but meaning limp weight, if she was indeed, limp. In other words, not necessarily because she was deceased, but even if she was knocked out or otherwise not moving on her own accord, it's very, very heavy to manage somebody that's 150 pounds. They did not traipse through the neighborhood with her. I know it's been said, oh, they used that empty house as a staging area. I don't know. I mean, if you mean, could they have parked there initially? Is that possible? I think that's possible. But to that point, if that's true, and again, that's a lot of supposition, but say that's true, it makes sense from the standpoint of, I don't think the getaway car was parked out in front of Nancy's house for at least 41 minutes. Doesn't make sense to call that attention, even though I want you to see how difficult it is to really see in here. There's bushes. It's so dark. You can't see basically in front of your face unless you had your headlights on or some sort of flashlight in your mouth like he did. But if you could imagine, I believe, and again, I've always said this, I believe that there is a walkie-talkie. People said, well, it could be a two-way radio. To be clear, all walkie-talkies are two-way radios, but not all two-way radios are walkie-talkies. So, for instance, in the Bureau, we used walkie-talkies, which we otherwise called handhelds. And our handheld radios, I'll show you a set of handheld radios. Oh, would you look at that? I have too many up on the screen again. Let me see. What do I want to get rid of? I already showed you the picture of the locksmith, but I'm thinking something along this line. And this looks almost exactly like what the antenna that was protruding out of the left side pocket of Porch Guy. That's really fairly easy to make out. You have to look close, and I have to say it was quite an epiphany when I saw it personally. But if you look here, that's what the antenna looked like. Very similar, that stuck out. These are sold at Walmart. I found oh so many. But let's see. In any event, that I think he would have used then to call the car over. I just don't believe that, at least as we said, for 41 minutes, think about 41 minutes. That's a long time to be sitting in front of the house where you're really involved in the most high risk scenario you can imagine. And that is abducting a woman who is the mother of a famous woman who's 84 years old. I just don't think you're going to leave that car parked out in front of that. Could it have been parked out in front of the abandoned house that's under renovation from the Texas folks? That's possible. But I certainly think that it wasn't parked out in front of there. And I really believe a two-way radio could have likely been used to communicate. I say that because we're not getting any geofencing information that is breaking this case wide open. And you would imagine that. I want to bring up here, if I can, sorry, I'm going through my library as we're doing this. I want to put up this picture again, and it's not the best picture. I've got multiple others, but this is the picture of that two-way radio that I keep referring to. I don't at all believe this was a jammer, because of the proximity, because of the imagery we have, because of the pacemaker that worked. I think there could have been an outage for sure. But this is the antenna. And you'll see it's actually in this image more of white. So hard to see. I'm so sorry. And I kind of circled above it. You can see just above to the left, the edge is poking out. And I have another picture that's actually better that I'll get downloaded onto this computer so we can have that if we discuss it again. But nevertheless, I think that is why there was somebody else involved. So I think that, and thank you, Marie, about these billboards. Listen, I really just have a good feeling about this. I just think it's just going to take the right person to see this. And thank you so much, Joe. Yes, so this is interesting, right? This is reporting. I think it was Ashley's source that says this, about them leaving the door open. Look, I don't know. Everybody knows I have source issues. And it's as simple as this. I'm just going to call it out. I love that the media is doing their job in developing sources. It's not with the media that is any issue with me. The issue is when I look at the motivation of somebody in law enforcement that would be a little rat or snake going behind the back of their superiors and giving information to the media. I just grew up in an FBI where you weren't allowed to do that. You didn't do that. You got fired for doing that. You got in trouble for doing that. I can give you a long list of even famous names that got in trouble for doing that. So it's just so rubs against my skin that anybody in law enforcement, and I understand it doesn't have to be law enforcement. They could have told their wife and then their wife is giving that. They could be talking to their hairdresser. There could be so many reasons that this could be done. It just rubs me wrong. So, and I know this is from source information. I was reading about this, but it doesn't mean that this couldn't be accurate. And this is the door that I think everybody's talking about that could have been left open. And it could have been. Look, they could have gone through there into the garage. And then if she left the back door from her house to the garage open or unlocked, then that would be an easy, accessible way. even if it wasn't unlocked, I can tell you, and I believe they put a deadbolt on here, but I don't want to say that for sure because the images are difficult to tell, but I can tell you for sure, the locksmith, they were there. We traced that license plate, definitely went through a locksmith company, and you can see them back there fiddling with the lock. So if there was any damage to that lock, that, you know, that makes me think there was damage to the lock rather than they left it open. But if there was no damage to the lock, maybe they just wanted to add a deadbolt. And that's very possible because even if you had just a lock, I can get into that in literally less than 20 seconds with not any special FBI tools. So any burglar or person who's going to apprehend this, who would have tried to apprehend somebody who would have been prepared, you know, they would have done that. So again, nothing against Ashley's reporting. I always just worry about these sources. And if the door was regularly left open, that does not bother me, or that does not surprise me one bit. Ask yourself, have you ever left your back door open? Do you regularly leave it back open? I think I told you, I always tease at my whole family. No one locks the doors because of where we grew up and the environment there. And everybody's on multi-acres. Their neighbors are far away. They couldn't see anything anyway. But I tell you what they do have. They have big old vicious, and they're not vicious except for against bad guys, German shepherds and other large dogs that you would not want to go past on a farm. So, they feel very secure. They don't lock their doors. And many families are like that. She lived in this house since she purchased it in, I believe, 1975 for $89,000. I hope I'm remembering those numbers right, but I think I am. 1975. Look, she's probably kept that door open on and off for years, forgets to lock it, maybe doesn't unlock it. So I think that's possible. But I truly believe the point of entry, like I said, I've said this from the beginning, was the back. And that was based in large part on me not seeing any forced entry from all the photos in the front and seeing porch guy that, in my opinion, had a very specialized mission. And his mission was to remove the camera from the front so that, and let me put that picture up, to open the camera from the front specifically so that they could meet with that getaway car and take Nancy out of the front. The closest proximity, let me see, is this the right one? The closest proximal point to the front door where you would be least, let's see, that's not the one I want, where you would have least exposure to being, I think it's this one. Something else crazy comes up. Yeah, this is the one where you would have least exposure of carrying around Nancy all around the house for possibly other neighbors, other cameras to see. So that always made sense to me. And again, we talk about staging area. Could that car that I speak of, lights out, nobody can see them at that house, it's all dark. Could they have used that to park a car? I think that's possible. Could the family have left the back door open? I think that's possible. But nevertheless, the point of entry, I've always said, whether it's using getting in the back through the lock, I'm not going to teach any lessons here, through a just a hand lock, or whether that was open and then they entered through that garage, or whether she just left it open. No matter what, I think that that was the point of entry based on the locksmith that went there and based on the fact that the front door was not compromised. So when you look at those things, it just made all the sense of the world in the world that was where the point of entry was. Again, could it have been one? Could it have been more? I'm sticking with what the facts tell me as an investigator and from my experience, this was not just a one-man operation. But I understand Mac, who I respect so much, Cheryl McCollum, Zone 7, and others who believe this was a lone wolf. This was an individual that was perhaps like an Alan Hinckley who wanted to get the attention of Savannah, who, you know, read the book about kidnappings that she mentions, Savannah Guthrie mentions in her book, that it's one of these mind game, she's going to get the, or this bad guy, this is very personal and angry and specifically targeting, her for those reasons, for that motive, not for money, but really just to hurt this family, to hurt Nancy, to hurt Savannah, Annie, Cameron, that was the goal. That is a school of thought that's out there. Lone wolf. It could be. I told you about 20% of me, and I think I'm down at about 10%, could see that scenario. But falling on Occam's razor, which is the simplest solution to a case, to a crime, to a medical issue, to an electrical issue, to any issue in your life, the simplest solution is usually the correct solution. And when I look at this, this looks like a planned abduction that went horribly wrong. And ransom was not sought. I've had people ask me, in fact, Mac asked me, she said, Jen, if they did that, why didn't they leave a note inside? Well, I wouldn't have left a note inside. You never know when the people are going to get to the inside. I would have snatched her out of there, taken her to a predetermined location that was all set for me to keep her in. I would have taken photos and I would have made communication with Tomasa, with Annie, with Savannah, with the family, and said, you have 24 hours to send this amount of money to this Bitcoin account. And I would have made it very simple. I wouldn't have made it a huge amount. I would have said $1 million, something that I would know that somebody worth $40 million could get their hands on quickly, because somebody that's worth $40 million, a huge amount of that is in real estate and in securities and in funds. And, you know, they're making their money work for them. It's not just sitting in a bank account somewhere. But I would believe that somebody could get a hold of $1 million. And then I would say, you would get her back. And this is where it's going to be. And this happens all the time in Mexico and South America. That is one thing that I don't know if everybody knows about. I've had Eric Johnson on here, a very well-known, well-respected, not only polygraph examiner, but hostage negotiator. And I need to get him on again. I've been reaching out. His mother, unfortunately, is very ill, but I'm hoping he'll come on with us. And I don't know how comfortable, because, you know, even for me, I remember when Marnie Hughes would interview me about the Gabby Petito case, and I would be sitting out on my porch, there'd be all these lights and camera people, and she'd be interviewing me. And I remember I would answer things like, yes, you know, do you think this investigative, yes, you know, it takes a long time when you come from an environment that is absolutely anti-media. And when I say anti-media, they don't trust the media. They don't believe, they just don't trust the media. The Bureau does not trust the media. If the proof is in the pudding, just look at the fact that they won't talk to the media now about this case, about Gabby Petito's case, about the Luigi Mangione case. Any case where the FBI has the lead and is involved in a great extent, the Idaho 4 case, you're not going to see them talking to the media. They do not trust the media. They know that their words will be flipped upside down, or they'll just take one chunk of what's said and kind of leave out everything on the other side. There's absolutely nothing to be gained in the FBI's view from talking to the media. So somebody like me or Eric Johnson or all the many FBI agents I've had on my show, that's their viewpoint. They're, you know, reluctant to talk to the media. Once you get on this side of the camera, in other words, you're not talking about your own cases or about open FBI cases that you're strictly not ever allowed to talk about. Even when you come on this side, I know for me, if you look back at my earlier, you know, 3 years ago with Marnie and even with Brian, I was very reluctant to say anything that, I don't know, that seemed outside of the realm of just the public's knowledge. I'll say it that way. And then in time, you loosen up, you know what you can and can't say that could, you always know what you can and can't say that would compromise an investigation. But you're able to open up. I mean, I always look back, for instance, when I talk about flaps and seals, or when I loosely talk about some of the work I did in foreign counterintelligence and the nuclear counterproliferation arena. When I talk about that, I look up before I ever mention anything to make sure it's not in the realm of my top secret clearance parameters. So I make sure that I would never release anything that isn't publicly known. So I'm very careful with that. And so my point is that a lot of times people don't want to talk about, you know, the exactly what's going on with these cases when they are in that realm. But I'm hoping I can get Eric Johnson to talk on, circling back now, particularly about these kidnappings in Mexico. There were literally agents on rotation there to handle all the kidnapping cases. And that's really, really important because there are so many Americans. Chris Cuomo, I was on with him not long ago about a woman who's an American citizen but was residing in Mexico, snatched right out of her garden by cartel folks. And they snatched her. They reached out to the family just like they always do. The family really didn't know what to do. The FBI was involved. Long story short, the family just could not come up with the money. She was on the show with Chris, with me. I had her number. I was calling her. I think she very much thought that the Bureau could just go in and figure out where she was and take her, but they can't do that. So nevertheless, at the end of the day, cartels, true cartel people who are involved in this business, snatch, contact, do a reasonable ransom demand that can be easily paid, and then they return the people. Now, they might return them beat up, and they might return them in not as good a place that they were when they snatched them, but they return them, everyone. And this is it's a business for the cartels. Imagine if you said you were going to return somebody, you got the ransom, and then you didn't return them. Your business would be like this. It would never work. But this is something that goes on all the time south of the border. I can't emphasize that enough. So the thought process is, could this possibly be a fringe of that? Believe me, I don't think any cartels came over and crossed the border in this environment where our border is closed up so tight. We have negative immigration rates right now. In other words, more people are leaving our country than are coming in. So they are not going to risk that. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't people who are peripheral to that that could be involved in this. But I'll tell you what, and I ask you to take a look at this. Cartel members and gangbangers do not wear holsters. They don't wear holsters. They put their stuff in their pockets, in their backs, in their front. They're so cool for school. They do not have holsters. I've never arrested in 6 years, detached to the local gang unit, night unit, day unit, detective unit. I worked it all. There is no person that had a holstered handgun. And Dale Lemberg actually brought this up too. And he said, listen, in all my years, he's got like 30 years working the streets, working robberies, kidnappings, because that's in one unit, working homicides. They don't wear holsters. So this guy is not a cartel member. This guy isn't a gangbanger. But is he on the peripheral of that? We can't say. He did a lot of things right to evade law enforcement all this time. He really did. I wanted to show you this picture, and I did this a lot on Twitter. I talked a lot about this on Twitter. And that was these guys. So these folks are part of a Chilean burglary ring. And, you know, obviously we can all see, you know, the backpack that has the, you know, what do you call that? The reflective straps. We can see the general outline of what they wear. In other words, they're not all in black. They're not all in black. They're in these colors, just like our porch guy, right? Now, what am I saying? Am I trying to say that this guy is part of a Chilean burglary ring? No. I'm not praying that she's part of, or that porch guy is definitely necessarily part of that. But does this give us some insight as to the background, as to him possibly being Hispanic, which I really believe he is, as to how sort of these Chilean rings dress and comport themselves? It's just something that the Bureau is going to definitely consider. Let's see. I also wanted to talk about this. Does everybody remember? So I brought this up before, but there's four searches, right, that were conducted. 20 hours, according to Sheriff Nanos, that Pima County was there. Then they left. So they would have started sometime on Sunday, and then they left Monday. Then 3 days later, the Bureau was brought in. And then 4 days, I believe on the fourth day, is when the Bureau's ERT, their evidence response team, and evidence response teams, I just want to explain this a little bit. What an evidence response team is, how it functions, is all FBI agents. Just imagine when you were in high school or you were in college and you had all your workload. Your whole reason for being there was to get an education and to study and to understand, you know, everything you had to learn from books so you could get a degree. That's how it is being an FBI agent. All day long, what you are doing is your work. You have all these cases assigned. You're judged on how you perform on these cases and how well you develop informants. That's a mandatory other section that's weighted just as high as your investigation section. They're not weighted different even. They're judged the same, and it's critically important that you develop good informants that provide good information and that are reliable. So a lot of people don't know that. But back to the ERT. So essentially, when you look at the evidence response team, and that she is a part of that team, when you look at this, this is what extracurricular activities are of FBI agents. So some agents love evidence response work. They want to go to those important crime scenes and be in charge of evidence collection. Other agents are interested in special weapons and tactics. So they want to try out for and try to get on the SWAT teams. Other are amazing marksmen in shots, and they try out for, because it's a whole tryout process. And once you're selected from your division to represent your division at Quantico, you're sent back to Quantico. I know I was back there for 3 weeks learning how to be a firearms instructor. And then same with SWAT. It was weeks. I think, I believe, as I recall, HRT came down. I believe it was 2 weeks. If I end up being wrong on that, I'm wrong. But I think it was a solid 2 weeks that HRT was there training us. And or you could go back to the Quantico, but Houston Division had the most amazing facility, really rivals parts of Quantico anyway, in terms of ranges and shooting houses and things like that. Look, Quantico is the A++ standard. So, but certainly Houston had the best secondary range type facilities in the Bureau, second to Quantico, but a low second. It's like 100% versus probably an 85. But nevertheless, HRT came down. And for my class, which again, they're very small classes, my class from the Houston Division, I think there were maybe 3 to 5 of us selected. And then San Antonio came in, Dallas came in, those. So there were probably in my SWAT class, probably 20 of us. But the bottom line is that wasn't my job, but I was graded on that. You're always graded on your extracurricular activities. But what you do day in and day out is you investigate. And then on the side, sort of like somebody who's in college and plays on the basketball team, or they decide to, you know, play an instrument and be in the band, whatever it might be, it's extra. So you put in that extra amount of time. You're still expected to 100% work your cases. And then on top of that, you work nights, you work weekends, you do what's necessary to meet your ERT, SWAT, firearms, whatever your other interest is, that's what you do. So I just wanted to explain that. Some people are canine handlers. That's another area. And they are detached, by the way, to the evidence response team. But I bring this whole camera thing up for this reason. Man, do I get off on these tangents. I bring this up because this camera, I want you to recall, caught someone. They couldn't make it out. At 2:12 a.m. At 2:28 a.m., her Apple Watch disconnected from her pacemaker. At 1:47 a.m., the camera was disconnected from the Nest wiring, taken off. So it didn't record anymore. So when you look at that timeline, I just want everybody to consider, and I'm going to talk to on Wednesday, not this Wednesday, this Wednesday, tomorrow is Julie Grant, which I'm so excited. And I'm looking on Twitter because Twitter X, because underneath there, people had some really cool ideas of what they wanted Julie and I to talk about. Some different cases I didn't expect. And remember, Julie's an attorney. She's a trial attorney. She was a litigator. So excited sort of to be a little bit on the opposite side. Whereas when I was at Court TV, she was asking me questions. Now I get to ask her some questions. So I'm really excited. That's Wednesday, 8 a.m. Eastern. I hope you all will be here. Not only because I think it'll be a fun and interesting and warm discussion because she's just an amazing human, but also to support Julie Grant. There is nothing that is good or positive about on the sly and unknowingly being told you are not going to have your job in a few weeks. There's nothing, it hits right in the gut for anyone who has had that happen to them. I understand it was a full revamp when Long Crime took over Court TV, and obviously we know almost everybody was slashed. I think three anchors were kept, but all the producers, the people behind the scenes were all slashed. Just a few were kept on board. So anyone who, not for the show, but just for Julie, it would be great to have y'all on here at 8 o'clock tomorrow to support Julie. All right. Sorry. Back to this camera. So this I find very interesting because this is what it goes to the point to. Everybody is making the assumption, and Dr. Fitzgerald and I spoke about this. There's a special coming out on the Nancy Guthrie case, but it's a local special that was done specifically to the Phoenix area, to that area. So I don't think it's going to be done nationally. My understanding is it's just in Phoenix. But anyway, I was asked to be on that with a couple other amazing panelists. And one of those was Dr. Fitzpatrick. And I want to tell you about Dr. Fitzpatrick. Look, she's the innovator that discovered genetic genealogy. She actually broke the very first case involving genetic genealogy. And she's going to talk about that. She's a nuclear, she's some sort of physicist. We'll get into it. I've got her bio. I just don't have it memorized for this. But she's going to join us a week from this Wednesday. And I want to thank you, Diana, for becoming a member. Really, really appreciate that. And I'm going to talk about something at the end that for all the members. But she'll be coming on Wednesday. And I've already put these out there. I'm trying to get ahead now when I get things scheduled. So Julie's is tomorrow at 8. And at 10 o'clock, because the good doctor is on West Coast time, she's going to be talking to us not only about DNA, but she's going to be talking to us about this case. And she has some interesting thoughts about the DNA, and I'm not going to spoil it because the session we did was pre-recorded and won't be coming out until April 1st, I believe, is when that Phoenix local show is coming out. Nevertheless, the 212, I mean, I was cutting this. So after the show, her and I just got on the phone and started yakking because, of course, I found her very interesting. And I wanted to just, you know, really get into her brain about some of her thoughts with this DNA. And then we also talked about a lot of thoughts about the entry when he came in. Everybody has believed that 41 minutes he was in the house. But was he really? Dr. Fitzpatrick brings up a very interesting point, and I loved this, and I actually posted about that I am buying into this, and that is that he didn't make entry right away. Remember this guy? Look at him on the front porch. He is lollygagging around like he's at a flea market shopping. It's just insane. You know, and when you look at his entire demeanor throughout the situation, he's not urgent. He's knocking on that, trying to get somebody's attention inside. You can see his left hand tries the doorknob. He then is like, nobody's paying attention to me, or, and I'm not going to spoil what she says about the weeds, because she said something I never thought about. So I'm going to let her talk about that on Wednesday. But she really got me to thinking about this 212 time frame, that this camera sees something, or if it's not this one, it might have been that other. There were two. Hi, Sweden. And when you look at that, everyone, so 147 fiddles around, gets the camera off, maybe has some problems. Anybody who does any home repairs, and I do some, very little, but what I do, I always, it ends up taking 5 times longer than I thought it was going to take. You know, it's hilarious. So with him, does he think this removal of the Nest camera, did it really take a Phillips and he had a straight edge? Did he have to go in his tool bag and get out the straight edge? Because, or did he have the right size of the Phillips? Did he have the thickness of the straight edge? You know, whatever he needed to remove that camera, to cut the wires, to do everything he did. You know, did that take a little while? I think it did. I think people are giving way too much credit to this 41 minute thing. I just don't think it's 41 minutes. I've wondered if it could be longer. In other words, if another bad guy could have slipped in the back and been there even longer, it's possible. But I just think this camera removal, then coming around, and thank you, Cheryl. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining. 212, he's seen by Nancy Guthrie's cameras. So I think 147 to 212, he's doing whatever he's doing, lollygagging and dismantling that camera at his leisure. Sorry, this is the picture probably from 111. No care in the world. So he's headed around in the back to make entry. 212, if there's not a co-conspirator, by the way, inside, someone is seen. Could it be the co-conspirator? I don't know. And then she's abducted really at 228. I think that's a solid time, because that's when the pacemaker disconnects from the bedside watch that she has on the bed. Now, I want to point this out. I just need to remove something from the studio so I can put this in. I want to pull up this picture again of her bedroom. This is from the Today Show. And the Today Show, she was teaching how to make one's bed. And it cracked me up because she reminds me so much of my mom. My mom's favorite color was also yellow. Everybody's like, Jennifer, do you just have a lot of yellow? I don't have that much yellow because it's a terrible color on me. I wear yellow whenever I'm doing anything on mainstream media or on social media, any channels I'm on, anything. If it's exclusively Nancy Guthrie, you're going to see me in yellow. And that is out of a tribute to her. It was her favorite color. And so that's what I do. I've also asked the mods are working on, I think, putting up yellow ribbons and yellow hearts so that people can use them. I think specifically when you're a member, they're working on that. We have some amazing mods and they're working on some new things. I really want to say to J15 and all the mods who have been here from the beginning, thank you so much to J15, who has been an absolutely amazing addition. She's got some great ideas, and this is one of them, and that's adding these yellow hearts. So nevertheless, when you see me in yellow, that's why. But if you look at her bedroom setup, and this is from 13 years ago, where she was teaching how to properly make a bed like my mom taught me, and I still don't make my bed, I think because I had to make my bed ever since I was about 3 years old, and sew clothes because my mom was an incredible seamstress. So she taught me, I had my first Singer sewing machine at three. It was a little one. I made all my own Barbie clothes, and she taught me how to sew, which is an invaluable skill, and I still have it. You never forget it. You know exactly how to use patterns and how to sew, and it's wonderful. But nevertheless, I guess this is the one way I rebelled. So I didn't really rebel in any other major way. I did not want to make my bed, and I still don't make my bed, but I sure as heck know how to. And that's what Nancy Guthrie was teaching. And Savannah Guthrie is funny when she talks about it too. Apparently she didn't like making her bed much either. So nevertheless, this photo is really, I think, invaluable for understanding. And I doubt very much that much would have changed in this. It's possible, but other than from my experience, when you're 84 years old, you're not really changing a lot. Maybe your linens and your pillows and maybe your plants, maybe get a new light, but you like what you like and you have it positioned the way you have it for a reason. So you can see how cornered she would have been in this room. But again, back to Nancy and solving this crime. If her pacemaker, and this is where the Apple Watch, that's why I brought this up. You see over on this, and I know you can't see my cursor, but over on this side shelf, this nightstand, that is where her Apple Watch was. Why? Because you are not ever supposed to wear your Apple Watch as you sleep. That's one of the recommendations of Apple Watch and of the people who make the pacemakers. You keep it separate. And so I want to also explain this. At about 6 to 12 inches, it can lose signal. But typically, from everything I've read about this and from having a very, very close relative with a pacemaker, is you can actually, she could have actually gone to other parts of her house possibly, and it would not have disconnected necessarily. A lot depends on the walls. You can see these walls. She has brick walls. It's not going to penetrate past that. No way. But drywall is different because basically the Apple Watch and the pacemaker are on the exact same frequency as Wi-Fi. It's not Wi-Fi, it's Bluetooth, but the frequencies are the same. So again, when you're talking about jammers jam frequencies, which would mean her watch, it would mean her or the Wi-Fi of these cameras. So that's why, and many other reasons, I don't think a jammer was used. But nevertheless, we know it disconnected. So was that the actual point that she got outside of these walls and was actually taken? And that's the disconnect. I've never believed it was the minute that they took her out of the bed. I think she made it further out than that from everything I understand with the Bluetooth range of this of her Apple Watch to the pacemaker. It could have gone into another room. But at some point, that Bluetooth signals failed. And certainly it failed when she got outside of these brick walls, because it can't penetrate that. The distance and the walls are too great. So I just wanted to touch on that. So now we have 147 camera disconnected. Mr. Lollygagger, who knows how long that took Porch Guy to even do that, the way he rolls. 212 seen by roof cameras outside of the house. 228 disconnects from her nightstand watch, from the watch that was on her nightstand. So, yes, I agree, Tim Collins. The pacemaker is out of range for the jammer has to be so close. I've posted these images before. Let me see. I'm going to remove this one so I can get this jammer. I just want everybody to see again, if you haven't been on or followed us, I just want everybody to see what a jammer does to a signal. It does not shut down your internet, everyone. It jams the Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, that frequency, and causes disruption in the signal. And for that to be done in this neighborhood, at all these houses, can you imagine the number of people that would have had to have been involved in this? Oh my goodness. And how close proximity they would have had to get to all these houses. And again, remember, they're reporting an outage. They're not reporting that their signal is jammed. So there's a big difference between those. Shoot, can I find this picture I want to show y'all? I'll keep looking. Nevertheless, I just wanted to touch on that. I spoke with this in great length with Dr. Fitzpatrick, and she is the one that brought this possibility to light for me. As we were discussing, as everybody knows, I've always been sort of, and many people have been frustrated with this time frame, with everybody saying 41 minutes. Yeah, never really stuck. And a lot of people have said that. And the piece, the Occam's razor piece, this is what a jammer does to signal. You can see these guys are fine because the jammer isn't close. And then the closer the jammer gets to that camera, the more distorted the signal is, which causes a distortion of the image that is taken up, if you will, that the camera then reflects. Or the camera then is able to take. Again, this is the two. So one of these two cameras on the porch, this is the third search that was conducted at the house. There were four searches conducted. And if you were able to watch our coverage on, we had that on Sunday night, and I have it featured. So if you just click on the YouTube link, you'll see it. It's the first thing that pops up. And unfortunately, I need to change it and say, you know, Nancy Guthrie. So everybody knows that panel was about Nancy Guthrie, because we don't have that denoted on the thumbnail. But great panel of just about 200 years of experience. When I looked at all the experience in law enforcement, homicide investigations, major crimes, robberies, kidnappings, literally 200 plus years. When you add the time and the backgrounds of everybody together. So I thought it was a really good panel. Not everybody agreed, and I didn't want that. That's a specific reason. And some people, there was one person that is a defense investigator. In other words, she works on the defense side after somebody is charged. And she's had, I think she said, it was dozens, I don't know the exact number, of death penalty cases. So she's very much a specialist. She's not on social media. She's not on YouTube, other than when she's kind enough to come on non-drama channels and lend her expertise. She brought up some great points. And one of the greatest points she brought up, and I'm hoping you guys watch it, one of the greatest points she brought up was, hey, everyone, we may never, ever know what happened. Not because an arrest isn't made. No. but because porch guy and anyone else that might have been around, anyone else might not ever speak, might not give their allocution of what happened. Look at what happened with Brian Koberger. Brian Koberger, after all of this, even though many of us believe he came after Maddie Mogan, he had no idea Kaylee was going to be there because her car wasn't there, and his 12 times doing his reconnaissance, that car wasn't recognized. He thought all these kids at 4 a.m. would be asleep. He had no idea Xana would be up eating Jack in the Box and scrolling. The others were asleep as he anticipated. You know, Ethan and Kaylee and Maddie. But Xana wasn't. Had no idea that Maddie would be in bed with Kaylee as they crashed out, you know, before texting Kaylee's boyfriend and doing, you know, what girls do. We all hang out afterwards and jibber jabber. So nevertheless, my point with all of that is he never allocated. He never let us know. Why were you there? Why did you target them? Did you kill Maddie first? Well, that's pretty much known that he killed Maddie first, but was Maddie your target? What went on with Kaylee that made you decide to destroy her face, not only with the knife, but with every other part of that instrument? Why didn't you go after Dylan and Bethany? Were you just too tired? You had everything already been messed up so much that your plan didn't work, that you just were so afraid of getting caught? Why in the world didn't you put that sheath tied up to your belt or deep into a camo pocket? Is that why you went back at 9 a.m? Was it to look for that sheath like we all think? Nevertheless, her point was, we may never know what Porch Guy says. I will say this. Every single person on that panel believes this case will be solved. Not one person on there with all their experience. Dale Lundberg, who 10-year homicide, and he probably has the most experience in terms of working straight homicides. And I know this wasn't a homicide, this is an abduction, but you work it like a homicide. And he said he does think it will be solved. And he had, I think, an 88% clearance rate, something like that. So about 12% of his cases were not cleared. And even he's saying it. So there's enough information. And so I want to circle back to the excitement that I want to bring to bear on this case and why I was so excited. And what I'm telling you, the great news is, in case you came in late, the great news is that FBI Phoenix has given us, and I'm saying us because it's going to take a community, the green light to go ahead and put together a billboard campaign with just Porch Guy's face on it. I might have Nancy Small in the corner, but let's face it, Nancy wouldn't have been seen after Porch Guy and whoever else left with her. That's not the face you're looking to recognize. You want to recognize this face. And FBI Phoenix, SAC, Special Agent in Charge, has confirmed that we can go ahead and move forward with this campaign. We will have the FBI's tip line on there because they gave us the blessing. In addition, the family, Savannah Guthrie, the Guthrie family has confirmed or is behind this campaign as well. And so we're going to get started ASAP. Today, I'm going to be working on talking to the actual individuals that run the billboards and working out a plan. If there is a cost, we've already got the GoFundMe set up. It's just waiting for the hit button that I will be asking. But I need to know the dollar first. So if it's, you know, $1,000 a billboard, I don't know what it's going to be. I want to start with 4. And where they're going to be is at the choke points outside of Tucson. So the East Corridor going to Texas, remember the original billboards were in large part in Texas and Houston. West going to California, you recall a lot of the original billboards were in California. And then finally two headed south to go to Mexico. You guys, we can make a difference here. It's going to take somebody seeing this face. Maybe somebody who knows him didn't see the face because they're Hispanic and they don't watch all this mainstream media and social media that's not in Spanish. Maybe it's somebody that doesn't tune in at all because you know what? They're working 10 hours a day driving from Mexico to their job at a hotel where they are literally working their butts off cleaning our rooms, vacuuming, but they might see this billboard. They might see it going back and forth. It is going to vastly change the number of impressions of people that are going to see Porch Guy's face. And that's why we're going to do it. It's going to be Porch Guy, Spanish, and English. This is going to be blown up. It's going to be huge. Have you seen this man? He is wanted in connection with Nancy Guthrie. Abduction. We'll get the wording right. The main thing is that people see the face, they notice it, and the FBI is also on there, so they can call. Yes, of course, we will have the 1.2 million reasons. The 1.2 million reasons why you need to turn this piece of crap in. So excited. And I thank every one of you who comes to the channel, who supports this channel as something that I can give back with that. We are having a really cool thing we're going to do with everybody who's a $3.99 subscription. $3.99 is for a month. So it's a pretty good deal. I think Starbucks is like $6 a Starbucks a day for those Starbucks folks. But nevertheless, if you are a $3.99 member, your name is going to be in a pool of people. And the minute an arrest is made, we're going to select a name. And that name is going to get a basket of FBI things. This will be directly from our headquarters. Patches, coins, pins, things along that line that I'll put together, and maybe a couple other cool things. But this is something I'd like to do more than once. But I'll get your address, and it's interesting. I did this a little bit on Twitter. I think I chose six different people where I would just say, hey, do you know about this? One time it was a historical thing, and one time it was, did they recognize this? And then I sent them a pen, you know, through the mail. I got their address and sent it out. So I just want to give something back to all of you members and all of you who engage, and just thank you. I really, really appreciate each and every one of you. And thanks for being here with us these mornings. Tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., Julie Grant. Please don't miss it. Please support Julie. And we're going to talk some true crime. It's going to be laid back, coffee and crime. We may touch on Nancy, of course, but I think we're going to touch on some other cases too. If any of you have X, I will be announcing this again. I already did, and people sent a lot of comments about with some suggestions for topics and things. So I want to keep that in mind. Everyone, I've kept you way too long. It's 9:42. That is past my hour that I keep you all or try to keep you all. Thank you all again. And let's find out what happened to Nancy. Let's get this horrific criminal off the streets. This billboard campaign, I think, has a chance to really do that. All right, everyone. Thank you all. Until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all those who are missing.